barked trees. The country is not yours, Radu scraped a stick against the ground to write out his Latin verbs. Is this not Valahia? Radu nodded. He had a smudge of dirt on his nose. It made her brother look small and ridiculous. It irritated Lada. He was always with her, an appendage to her life, and she never could decide how to feel about him. Sometimes, when a smile broke across his face like sun reflecting off a stream, or she saw him relax into sleep, she was filled with an unaccountable sort of ache. It terrified her. Sit up straight, she tugged on his chin and wiped his nose with her shirt so viciously that he cried out and tried to get away. She gripped his chin tighter. This is Valahia, and I am the daughter of Valahia. Our father is the prince of Valahia. This is my country. Radu finally stopped struggling, glaring at her instead. Tears pooled in his big eyes. He was so pretty, this brother of hers. His was a face that made women stop in the lanes to coo at him. When he flashed his dimpled smile, the cook gave him extra servings of whatever he loved best. And when Lada saw him hurt, she wanted to protect him, which made her angry. He was weak, and protecting him felt like a weakness. Machia certainly suffered no such weakness on her behalf. She let go of Radu's chin and rubbed the back of her head. Last month, Machia had yanked her hair so hard he had left a bald spot, which only now was starting to fill in.
Girls should know their place, he had hissed.
Lada lifted her face to a ray of sunshine, fighting its way through the leaves. This is my place. Her father had given it to her, and Valahia would always be theirs. Radu kicked at his scribblings in the dirt.
Not everyone wants the country to be ours. Can we return to... The tutor started, but Lada held up a hand, silencing him.
Dropping to a crouch, she picked up a round stone, one perfectly fitted to her palm, balanced, heavy. Spinning, she launched the stone through the air. A thud was followed by a sharp cry of anger, and then laughter. Bogdan stood from where he had been creeping along the ground, trying to sneak up on them.
Try harder, Bogdan. Lada's sneer shifted into a smile.
Come sit. Radu is mangling Latin.
Radu is doing very well, the tutor frowned at Bogdan. And I am not employed to educate the son of a nursemaid.
Lada stared down at him with all the cold, imperious command she was born to.
You are employed to do as you are told.
The tutor, who was very fond of his straight, unblemished nose, sighed wearily and continued the lesson.
Now in Hungarian, Lada commanded Bogdan, her walk quick and assured down the hallway.
Turgoviste was set up like a great Byzantine city. Castle in the middle, manors of the boyars circling it, dwellings of the artisans and performers who earned the patronage of the boyars circling that, and then, outside the massive stone walls, everyone else. Within the walls, homes were painted a dazzling array of reds and blues, yellows and greens. Riots of flowers and tinkling fountains competed for attention. But the stench of human waste lurked beneath everything, and the poor and sick masses seemed to creep ever closer to the inner city. Lada had even seen their shacks built against the wall itself. Lada and Radu were not allowed to spend time in the outer rims of Turgoviste. They were bundled and rushed through the streets whenever they left the city, catching only glimpses of ramshackle homes and suspicious, sunken eyes. They lived in the castle, which, for all it tried, could not pretend at the splendor of Constantinople. It was dim, dark, narrow. The walls were thick, the windows slits, the hallways labyrinthine. The castle's construction proved the pools and gardens and brightly clothed bodies were lies. Turgoviste was no glittering Byzantium.
Even Byzantium was no longer Byzantium. Like everything else, this close to the Ottoman Empire, Wallachia had become a stomping ground for stronger armies, a pathway smashed by armored feet again and again and again. Larda put her hand against the wall, feeling the cold that never quite left the stones. The castle was both the goal and the trap. She had never felt safe here. She knew from the snapping tone and tense demeanor of her father that he felt constantly threatened, too. She longed to live somewhere else, in the countryside, in the mountains, somewhere defensive where they could see their enemies coming for miles, somewhere her father could relax and have time to speak with her. Two Janicheris walked past. They were elite Ottoman soldiers, taken as young boys from other countries in the name of taxes, trained and groomed to serve the Sultan and his god. Their ceremonial caps, bronze with flowing white flaps, bobbed as they laughed and talked, perfectly at ease. Her father insisted the castle was a symbol of power, but he refused to see the true symbolism of Turgoviste. It did not give them power. It gave others power over them. They were trapped here, prisoners to the demands of the powerful Boyar families. Worse, despite her father's anointment to crusader by the Pope, they were still a vassal state to the Ottoman Empire. Her father sacrificed money, lives, and his own honor to the Ottoman Sultan, Murad, for the privilege of this throne. Bogdan babbled on in the language of their Hungarian neighbors to the west, telling Larda about his day. She pushed into the grand hall, occasionally correcting his pronunciation. The two Janicheris were there, lounging against a wall. Larda spared them only a brief glare. They were like a rock in her slipper, constantly irritating. Bulgaria and Serbia had similar arrangements with the Sultan, paying money and boys to the Ottoman Empire in return for stability, while Hungary and Transylvania fought to avoid being vassals. The tension between borders demanded Vlad's constant attention, forced him to leave for weeks on end, and gave him pains in his stomach that made him nasty and irritable. Larda hated the Ottomans. One of the Janicheris raised a thick eyebrow. Though he looked Bulgarian, maybe Serbian, he spoke Turkish. "Ugly thing, the girl. The prince will be lucky to find her a match, or perhaps a nunnery with low standards." Larda continued as though she had not heard, but Bogdan stopped. He bristled. The soldier noted his understanding and stepped toward them in interest. "You speak Turkish?" Larda grabbed Bogdan's hand, answering with perfect pronunciation. "One must learn Turkish if one is to command the castle dogs." The soldier laughed. "You would be right at home with them, little bitch." Larda had her knife out before the soldier or his companion noticed. She was too short to reach the man's neck, so she satisfied herself with a vicious slash across his arm. He shouted in pain and surprise, jumping back and fumbling with his sword. Larda gestured, and Bogdan threw himself at the soldier's legs, tripping him. Now that he was on the floor, his neck was an easy target. Larda pressed the knife beneath his chin, then looked up at the other soldier. He was a pale, lean man, almost a boy, really, with shrewd brown eyes. He had one hand on his sword, the long, curved blade favored by the Ottomans. "Only a fool would attack the prince's daughter in her own home." "Two soldiers, against a harmless girl." Larda bared her teeth at him. "Very bad for treaties." The lean soldier took his hand off his sword and stepped back, his smile a perfect match to his weapon. He bowed, sweeping out an arm in deference. Bogdan jumped up from the floor, trembling with rage. Larda shook her head at him. She should have left him out of this. Larda had a sense for power, the fine threads that connected everyone around her, the way those threads could be pulled, tightened, wrapped around someone until they cut off the blood supply, or snapped entirely. She had few threads at her disposal. She wanted all of them. Bogdan had almost none. And what threads he did have were his simply by virtue of his being a boy. People already respected him more than they did his mother, the nurse. It made Lada's jaw ache, the ease with which life greeted Bogdan. She jabbed her knife, poking the prone soldier once more for good measure, but not quite hard enough to break the skin. Then she stood straight, smoothing the front of her dress. "You are slaves," she said. "There is nothing you can do to hurt me." The lean soldier's eyes narrowed thoughtfully as he looked over Lada's shoulder, where Bogdan loomed. She grabbed his arm and walked out of the room with him. Bogdan was fuming.
"We should tell your father."
"No.
Why?"
"He should know how they disrespected you. They are beneath our notice. They are less than the mud. You do not get angry at the mud for clinging to your shoe. You wipe it off and never look at it again. Your father should know."
Lada scowled. It was not that she feared punishment for her actions. What she feared was that her father would find out how the Yana Cherries viewed her and realize they were right. That she was a girl. That she was worth less than the castle dogs until the day she could be married off. She had to be the smartest, constantly surprising and delighting him. She was terrified that the day she stopped amusing him would be the day he remembered he had no use for a daughter.
"Will we be punished?" Bogdan's face, as familiar and beloved as her own, wrinkled in concern. He was growing like a spring shoot, so much taller now. As far back as she could remember, he had been at her side. He was hers, her playmate, her confidant, her brother in spirit, if not blood. Her husband. Where Radu was weak, Bogdan was steady, strong. She tugged one of his big ears. They stuck out from his head like handles on a jug, and were more precious to her than any of the fine things in the castle. "The Yanacheris have only what power we decide they do." She meant it as a reassurance, but her mind stuck on the curved sword that hung above her father's throne. A gift from the Sultan to her father. A promise and a threat, like most things in Turgo Viste were. The next morning, Lada awoke late, eyes heavy with sleep and mind muddled by nightmares. There was a strange noise, a hiccuping sort of moan, coming from the other side of her bedroom door. Angry, she stomped out into the chambers that connected her room to Radu's, where their nurse slept. The nurse had all her soft parts hidden as she held herself, rocking. She was the source of the noise. Radu patted her back, looking lost. "What happened?" Lada asked, panic rising in her chest like a handful of bees.
"Bogdan."
Radu held up his hands, helplessly.
"The Yanacheris took him."
The bees turned into a swarm. Lada ran from the room straight to her father's study, where she found him bent over maps and ledgers.
"Father!"
It came out breathless, desperate, small. All her efforts to force him to see her as something other than a little girl unraveled in that single word. But she could not stop herself. He would help. He would fix this.
"The Yanacheris have kidnapped Bogdan."
Her father looked up, setting down his quill and wiping his fingers on a white handkerchief. It came away smudged with black, and he dropped it to the floor, discarded. His voice was measured. "The Yanacheris told me they had some trouble with one of the castle dogs. An injury to a soldier. They requested we supply a replacement who had been taught Turkish. It is a fortunate turn of events for the son of a nursemaid. Is it not?"
Lada felt her lower lip tremble. That feeling she got in her heart when her father looked at her, that frantic, desperate pride, twisted and soured. He knew what Bogdan was to her. He knew, and he let the Yanacheris take her dearest friend anyway. He did not care, and now he watched for her reaction, weighing her.
She clenched her shaking hands into fists. She nodded.
"See that the dogs behave themselves from now on."
Her father's eyes cut straight through her, releasing the bees and leaving her echoing and empty inside. She curtsied, then walked stiffly out, collapsing against the wall and shoving her fists against her eyes to push the tears back inside. This was her fault. She could have walked away from the Yanacheris. Radu would have. But not her. She had to defy them, had to taunt them. And one of them, the thin one, had known just by looking at her the best way to hurt her. All her tiny threads snapped and circled back around her heart, squeezing too tightly. This was her fault. But her father had betrayed her. He could have said no, should have said no, should have stopped it, should have shown the Yanacheris that it was he, not them, who ruled Valachia. He had chosen not to. Her mind stuck on the image of his discarded handkerchief, dirtied and dropped, forgotten now that it was not pristine. Her father was wasteful. Her father was weak. Bogdan deserved better. She deserved better. Valachia deserved better. She went back to the mountain in her mind, stood on its peak, remembered the way the sun had embraced her. She would never toss aside her country the way her father had. She would protect it. A small sob threatened to break free. What could she do? She had no power. Yet, she vowed. She had no power. Yet. 8. Radu had always hated Bogdan. Hated that he stole Lada's time and attention. Hated the way he tugged on Radu's hair, or pulled his ear, or sneered when Radu scraped a knee and could not help crying. Hated most of all that Bogdan ignored him the rest of the time. And now Bogdan had stolen Radu's nurse, leaving a hollow shell behind. It was Bogdan's own fault he was gone. He had to ruin everything else on his way out, too. Radu's rooms were a suffocating sepulchre to Bogdan. His nurse wept in her chair, sewing basket dormant beside her. Lada was worse, though. Normally, when something did not go her way, she became a torrent of rage, a sweeping storm that flew in and overwhelmed everything, working itself out as quickly as it had descended. With Bogdan's loss, however, Lada was silent, staring, calm. It terrified Radu. He tucked himself into a corner of the stables, a dark, musty spot where only someone looking could find him. No one was ever looking for Radu. A spider crawled down his hand and he lifted it, gently placing the spider on a wood beam where it would be safe. Two swaggering Yanacheris led their sweating and quivering horses into the stables. Radu watched through narrowed eyes as they efficiently wiped down the horses, watered them, and got them fresh feed. When Machia returned from riding, he always jumped down, threw his reins at a servant, and walked off. Machia whipped his horses, too, the angry furrows in their flanks marking them as his favorites. Once Radu had been watching when no stable boy was present. Machia simply got off his horse, a long gash on its leg seeping blood, and left. Radu wanted to hate all Yanacheris out of loyalty to Lada, but he liked the way they took care of their animals. He also liked their funny hats and the way they always had someone. There was never a Yanacheri by himself. The two men had been talking in low, comfortable voices the whole time. "Have you noticed the new animal in here?" one asked. His back was to Radu. The other Yanacheri, a young man with pockmarked skin and dark eyes, shook his head. "A shy creature. I should think he's very valuable. But I have yet to see anyone take him out for a ride. Pity." "Oh, do you mean the pale one? Big eyes, curly hair, hides in a corner?" Fear seized Radu. They knew he was here. What would they do to him? "Yes, that one. Seems a sad little thing. Perhaps if he made friends with some of the other animals..." The Yanacheri straightened and turned his head, smiling with kind eyes at Radu's hiding spot. "Would you like to help us with the horses?" Radu did not move. This one is very gentle. See?
The Yanacheri nuzzled the horse's head with his own. The horse huffed right in his face, and both soldiers laughed.
Come on, come meet your stable mate.
Radu shuffled forward, pressed against the stall doors, eyes darting to the entrance. The Yanacheri held out a stiff, bristled brush.
Here now, make yourself useful. We have to bend over so far to reach the lower spots. Help save our poor aching backs.
The brush was heavy in Radu's hand. He reached out with it, hesitant, barely touching the horse. He had been trained to ride, but Mochia had been in charge, which meant Lada became wild and competitive, and Radu got yelled at the whole time. He still had a mark on the back of his neck, from where Mochia whipped him once. Mochia claimed he had been aiming for the horse. The kind-eyed Yanacheri put his hand over Radu's, showing him how to stroke, how much pressure to use.
I take it you are not a stable boy.
Radu shook his head, keeping his eyes down.
Oh, I know who our little creature is, the pockmarked Yanacheri grinned, a gap-toothed smile. Do they keep all the little princes in the stables? What odd customs Valahia has. I trust you like eating oats.
Radu knew he was being teased, but it felt kind, playful. He ventured a smile.
I prefer cake.
Both Yanacheris laughed, one patting him on the shoulder. Unlike when Mochia did it, it was simply a pat on the shoulder, and not a disguised blow. Radu helped the soldiers with the rest of their chores, asking a few questions, but mostly listening. When they were finished, they told him to meet them there earlier the next day to help exercise the horses. He practically skipped back to his rooms, breathless and flushed with happiness. Lada, thankfully, was nowhere to be found. His nurse was in her usual spot. Radu climbed onto her chair and snuggled into her side, putting his hand on the back of her neck. She sighed, not looking at him.
Did you know, Radu said, as carefully as he had set the spider down, that Yanacheris are very prestigious in Ottoman society?
His nurse frowned and looked at him for the first time in days.
They are educated and trained and even paid. Everyone admires them. I was talking to one today who told me his mother gave him to the Yanacheris to save him from a life breaking himself to bits against the rocky soil. He said, Radu paused, his voice getting softer. He said he was grateful, that it was the best thing that could have happened to him. He always has enough to eat, and he has plenty of friends and money to spend when he wants to. He said he is smarter and stronger than he ever would have been. He says he prays every day, out of gratitude, too, and love for his mother.
The Yanacheri had not actually said any of that, but his nurse held Radu's hand so tightly it hurt. He did not move away. She nodded, wiping at her eyes. Be a good boy. Hand me my sewing basket. Radu settled in and watched her trembling hands get surer with every stitch. The air was heavy and thick with humidity as Radu dragged a stick along the cobbled path behind the castle that led to the stables. He hummed happily to himself, but the humming was cut short when someone cuffed him on the back of his head.
Where are you going? Mochia asked.
Radu did not answer. Silence was the best tactic with Mochia. Their father came sweeping along behind Mochia, and Radu shrank back even further. He had not spoken to his father in, he did not know how long. His father's black eyes passed over him as though he were not even there. Then Vlad blinked and finally focused on his youngest son.
Radu.
He sounded vaguely questioning, as though reciting some fact he could not quite remember. Behind him came several boyars, mostly from the Dinesh family, their long, simmering rivals. Andre was with them, skittering and withdrawn, as he always was now. Dressed for riding, they all paused, staring at Radu. Radu wished they were women. He had a much easier time with women. Men were harsh and hard and unmoving in the face of a quick, brilliant smile. Lada would know what to do,
She would scowl and stick her nose in the air and dare any of them to think they were better than her. Radu stood straighter and pretended to be her.
"Can the boy ride?"
one of the oldest, Dinesh boyars, asked, his tone bored, but with a slight challenge. His father considered Radu, eyes hard.
"Of course he can."
Radu hurried along in the wake of his father and brother. He worried that he was not invited and would be punished, but he worried even more about what would happen if he was expected to come and failed to comply. His Yanacheri friends were in the back of the stable, waiting for him. Lazar, the one with the gap-toothed smile and easy laugh, took in the scene, and Radu's terrified expression, with a quick look. Radu had been riding with them nearly every day, and under their playful tutelage, he had become comfortable, even skilled in the saddle. He had also perhaps told them too much about his family. He hung his head as the horses that had been prepared for the riding party were brought out. There was not one for him, making it clear to everyone that he was not intended to be part of this, or a part of anything, for that matter. As Radu watched his father mount, shame welling up and threatening to leak from his eyes, Lazar cleared his throat.
"Your horse!"
He held out the reins and nodded respectfully, as though Radu were more than a forgotten boy. Radu took the reins, grinning, but then closed his mouth quickly and imitated Lazar's detached formality. "Thank you." He mounted as smoothly as he could, sitting straight in the saddle and nudging his horse forward to be level with Machia's. He clenched his fists around the leather straps so his fingers would not tremble. The party headed toward the forest, keeping together as they rode through an open field. His father looked over and, as though once again surprised to see him existing, took in Radu's excellent form.
Radu's chest swelled with pride to be here, riding with his father and his older brother at the head of a group of boys, where he belonged.
He lifted his chin higher and met his father's eyes, anticipating a smile.
"Do not embarrass me," his father said, tone flat, before urging his horse forward without another glance.
Radu's chest collapsed, all his pride and hope turning ugly and sour in his stomach. The rest of the ride was a sweaty and uncomfortable slog among trees buzzing with insects. He let his horse fall back, ending up near the rear of the group with the less important boyars, who grumbled and gossiped among themselves, oblivious to his presence. Twice branches whipped Radu's face, leaving it stinging. But he did not cry out, and he did not break form. He listened to the conversations around him, and he noted when complaints were a bit too pointedly directed at the head of the group. He embarrassed no one. He remained unnoticed and invisible. It was, apparently, both the least and the most he could do for his father.
9. Lara could not breathe in the castle. A miasma of anxious fear hovered over everything. People gathered in dark corners whispering. Her father threw banquet after banquet, trying to appease the boyars, who were growing increasingly open in their hostilities. Everywhere she went, eyes followed her. Bogdan had been a sort of shield, always at her side, always obedient. Losing him would have been difficult enough. But she had also lost the love and worship she had nurtured for her father. Now she could see how little her father actually cared for Valahia. Everything he did was for himself, to protect his own power at whatever cost. The armor she imagined his love had given her had been stripped away, and without it, she was naked and vulnerable. Every day was precarious, every smile and interaction dangerous. One false move, and perhaps she, too, would be discarded. Her father still favored her, and she suspected that, in his own way, he truly cared about her. But his love was as contemptible and flimsy as one of his endless string of false political promises. She would be 13 this summer. Her mother had married at 13.
Lara's mouth tasted like blood and iron all the time now. It tasted like defeat.
As she walked through the corridors one evening on her way to the kitchens, a boyar knocked her out of his way without so much as an apology. It made her feel small and unimportant. She was small and unimportant.
She hurried to the gardens behind the castle courtyard, dunked her head in a fountain, and swished water through her mouth to rinse everything away. Muffled screams caught her attention. She knew that sound well, as she was usually the one causing it. A fierce possessiveness welled in her chest, and she stormed through the garden, closing in on Radu and his assailant.
Machia had Radu by the back of his neck, and was pushing him deeper and deeper into the unforgiving thorns of a dense rosebush.
Machia was strong and thick like their father, but his facial hair was still patchy. Sometimes Lara caught him standing over a reflecting pool and tugging on his sparse moustache like he could make the symbol of his status grow faster.
"What did you hear?"
Machia hissed, unaware of his audience. Radu screamed as Machia pushed harder.
"Nothing! Nothing!"
Radu insisted. Lara silently unsheathed the knife she always wore under her sash and held it behind her back.
"There you are," she scowled. "Father has been asking for you."
Machia looked over, face open and pleasant, as though he had not been caught torturing their brother.
"Has he?"
"Something about the boyars?"
Lara lifted her free hand and waved it in disinterest. It was a good lie. There was always something about the boyars that needed attending to.
She plucked a rose and held it to her face. She hated the way roses smelled, their sweetness too fragile.
She wanted a garden of evergreens, a garden of stones, a garden of swords. She smiled conspiratorially at Machia.
"He seemed angry."
Machia met her smile.
"He is always angry.
Perhaps his cap is too tight.
Perhaps his breeches are too small.
Perhaps," Lara said, noting that Machia had relaxed his grip on Radu's neck and that Radu had the sense to stay perfectly still.
"What is inside his breeches is too small."
Machia let go of Radu, throwing his head back and roaring a laugh. He clapped his hand on Lara's shoulder, squeezing too hard.
"Be careful, sister. You have dirt inside that mouth."
He directed one vicious kick at Radu's prone backside, then hurried past them into the castle. There was meanness at Machia's core. Lara had watched him torment the castle dogs for sport, causing pain for no reason. She did not understand it. Why do anything without purpose? She had no love whatsoever for him. But she had a healthy portion of fear.
"Come on," Lara yanked Radu free of the bush, his sleeves catching and tearing on the thorns. Based on his cries, his skin caught and tore as well.
She pulled him along after her, out of the garden and through the gate, into an abandoned stable, empty save for the overwhelming odor of rotting hay. Any extra horses they once had been sold to cover their father's spiraling debts. Most of the main stable was occupied by Yanacheri horses, boyar horses, horses of their debtors.
"If Machia finds father, he will know I lied."
Lara sat on the floor, skirts bunching beneath her. Radu wiped his nose on his sleeve.
"Why did you help me?
Why do you always need help?"
Exasperated, she directed him to sit next to her and examined his face. The cuts were shallow, nothing serious. She pulled a few thorns from his arms, not pausing at his whimpers. She was never kind or tender with Radu. But what she did was for his own good. He was too delicate for this world, and the sooner he changed, the easier life would be for him.
"What was Machia so angry about?"
Radu shifted, angling his face away from her.
"Nothing."
She grabbed his chin and forced him to look at her. A stray beam of light hit his ears, and she felt Bogdan's loss and her loneliness like a pain in her stomach. Sighing, she put an arm around Radu and drew him closer. Would their father send Radu away too? Would he let Machia, the eldest and most favored, kill him? The pale spring day was chilly, and her wet hair left her shivering. "You have to stay away from Machia," she said. "He is meaner than Father's falcon, and far dumber." Radu sniffled a laugh. "And far uglier, and far more likely to carry fleas." They were quiet for a while, breathing together, when Radu spoke again. "I was hiding behind the drapes. I heard him speaking with a Dineshed family boyar. In the 15 years before their father took the throne, there had been 10 princes, alternating between 2 families. The Bazarab line, now out of contention, with no heirs of age, and a Dineshed line. The Dineshed family was not happy with the Draculeshed usurpers. First Larda and Radu's uncle Alexandru, and now their father. And, as history proved, being prince was a very tenuous position in Wallachia. Why was he speaking with the Dineshts? Radu squirmed, and Larda realized she was squeezing his shoulder so tightly she was hurting him. She let go, and he said, "There is talk of a Boyar coalition. They mentioned Hunyadi." Larda's skin prickled. Hunyadi was the military leader of Transylvania and Hungary. They're constantly shifting border countries to the west. Where her father had sworn to fight the Ottomans, Hunyadi actually did. He had beaten the Sultan on numerous occasions. Larda could never decide what to think of Hunyadi. She sensed that he was a threat to her father's power, but she could not help seeing that Hunyadi was the man her father was supposed to be. She listened in when she could, stole her father's letters and annotated maps, and studied Hunyadi's strategies. He was fascinating. He fought like a rabid dog at unexpected times, and then disappeared to harass the enemy again later. Even with inferior numbers and forces, he usually wore the Ottomans down. He was the Draculeshts' ally, but he was also dangerous, and he did not look kindly on her father's double dealing. "I thought the Boyars supported Ottoman ties. They encouraged father to seek their help. Most of the Boyars are unhappy. They see how successful Hunyadi's campaigns against the Sultan are. They want to ally only with him now. There is talk of a betrothal." Larda stiffened. "Who?" she asked, though she knew the answer. "Matthias, Hunyadi's son." A sharp pain beneath her fingernails alerted Larda to the fact that she was scraping them against the rotting wood floor so hard that slivers were stabbing into her palm. She would be married to grant someone else an advantage, and when that alliance fell through, as all alliances did, she would be shuffled to the side, left in a convent abandoned and cut off. An image of their mother, nearly forgotten since she had left them, crawled through Larda's mind. She recoiled from the memory of that woman. Powerless, broken, an abandoned alliance had left her a prisoner in someone else's home, someone else's country. Larda squeezed her hand shut around the splinters, warm drops of blood pooling in her palm, covering the scar of her play-acting with Bogdan. There would be no happy marriage of equals for her. No one would agree to let her rule. "I will never marry." Radu pried her hand open and attempted to dig out some of the slivers. She let him. He was far gentler with her wounds than she had been with his. "How do you know all this?" She considered him in wonder. She had assumed Radu spent his days dreaming. His big eyes had a way of looking pleasantly vacant, as though he were not even aware of conversations going on right in front of him. While Larda was fixated on tactics and Hunyadi, she had studiously ignored the intrigues of the Boyars. She saw now that was an error.
"People forget I am listening. I am always listening. We should tell father about Machia's plans."
Radu went perfectly still, head down. Larda did not have to see his expression to know how he looked. Terrified.
"He will be angry, and Machia will kill me. I am scared to die. Everyone dies sometime, and I will not let Machia kill you. If anyone is going to kill you, it will be me. Understand?"
Radu nodded, snuggling into her shoulder.
Will you protect me? Until the day I kill you. She jabbed a finger into his side, where he was most ticklish, and he squealed with pained laughter. The look he gave her was one she recognized, the same hungry, desperate look she used to give their father. Radu loved her, and he wanted her to feel the same for him. For the first time since he had been introduced into her life, placid and beautiful and worthless, she found Radu interesting, perhaps even useful. And more than that, in Bogdan's absence, she felt like someone belonged to her again.
10. The scratches on Radu's face and arms from Machia's garden attack had faded to thin red lines. He had lied to his nurse, told her that he tripped and fell into a bush. Reporting on Machia never accomplished anything. But this time perhaps it would. Lada had told him to talk to their father. And he could. He would. Radu paced in their chambers. The information he had about Machia conspiring with the Boyars would hurt all Radu's enemies. Machia first and foremost. Oh, Radu would love to see him fall from grace. And the Dinesh family were the main aggressors behind the coalition. So if they were punished or ostracized, it would hurt Andre and Arone. Of course, Andre and Arone avoided him now. Avoided nearly everyone. They were already outcasts in the court after their false crime and real punishment. But Radu still feared that someday they would trace it back to him. He had made his nurse arrange for the servant boy who had helped him to be sent with a family to Transylvania, lest the boy reveal Radu's deception. He lied to himself that Emil was better off. But Radu knew it had been entirely selfish. But beneath every other motivation, the desire to hurt Machia, to punish the Dinesh, was this. If Radu heroically revealed the plot, his father would finally see him. He would know that Radu was smart, that Radu was valuable, and Lada would be proud. Lada entered their chambers, glaring at him. "Sit down, you make me dizzy." He did not sit, too flushed with excitement. "I am going to tell father about Machia and the Boyar Coalition. He will be so proud of me. He will be furious. Not with me. Do you imagine him thanking you? Embracing you warmly, thrilled with the news that his own son is working against him? You are a fool." All Radu's careful hopes were fleeing. He shook his head. "He will be glad to know. He will thank me. We cannot always predict how our father will respond." She looked at the corner where their nurse's basket of mending sat beneath her chair. The nurse used to darn Bogdan's socks, cursing him for wearing them out so quickly. She no longer had that task. A dark realization seized Radu. "You are jealous. You want father to see only you." Lada laughed, a bitter sound. "I do not want father to see me offering him a conspiracy to take away even more of his power. You are welcome to that." She stomped out of the room. Radu found her later that day, standing on the narrow walled ledge that surrounded the tower. "Did you tell him?" she asked without looking at her brother. Radu did not answer. "Coward." But she angled her body so he could stand next to her. "We will think of some way to reveal the truth without entangling you in the mess. You do not want to draw father's attention as being part of this. But how? We need a little time. We have information, which means we have power. We must think of..." She stopped, narrowing her eyes at something in the distance. A man rode down the main street, surrounded by soldiers. As the man got closer, Radu saw that he smiled, one hand uplifted in a gesture of friendship. His men, grim and hardened, with hands hovering near their swords, promised something else entirely. Several flags Radu did not recognize hung limply from poles carried at the group's rear. "Who is he?" "Hunyadi," Lada said, the name dropping from her lips, like a curse. They watched from the tower, and though Radu knew he was supposed to hate Hunyadi,
He found himself in awe. Hunyadi rode into another man's kingdom, and the people he passed smiled and bowed. When Radu's father was on horseback, he rode hunched over and leaning forward. Whether to arrive faster or to make himself a smaller target, Radu did not know. Hunyadi sat straight in his saddle, shoulders back, chest presented to the world in defiance of assassins' arrows.
"We are too late," Lada said. "All your information is worthless now."
Radu's eyelids felt heavy with shame. He had never managed to be useful to his father, and now, because of his cowardice and delay, he had failed once again. Lada turned toward the door.
"Well, we may as well see what doom the Transylvanian terror brings with him."
Radu tripped over his own feet in haste to keep up with Lada as she threw herself down the tower steps and into the great hall before Hunyadi arrived. She paused at the entrance, and Radu slipped past her, finding a dim corner where he often stood unobserved. She elbowed him sharply in the side, and he made room for her. A few minutes later, their father rushed in. His hat was askew, his moustache so recently curled, Radu could still smell the oil. He sat down on his ornate throne, fixing his hat and breathing heavily. He was sweating. In that moment, Radu knew his father was no longer in control of Wallachia. Perhaps he never had been. The stinging taste of his father's perfumed oil was heavy on Radu's tongue as John Hunyadi strode confidently into the room.
"He is magnificent," Radu whispered. "He is the end of us,"
Lada answered. When his father pulled him out of bed, Radu was certain he was dreaming. He dressed in a sleepy candlelit haze, his father's murmured anxious words washing over him. He knew it was a dream because his father had never been in his room before, had never helped him dress or asked if he would be warm enough. Radu was 12. He was old enough to dress himself, but he let his father help. He would not puncture this dream, not willingly. It was not until they were outside in the sharp night air and Machia arrived, leading horses, that panic set in. He and Lada were lifted onto saddles, though they could mount by themselves. Several Yanacheris waited nearby, their horses huffing soft white clouds of breath.
"Where are we going?" Radu whispered. No one had told him to be silent,
but a blanket of stealth and threat hung over them all, and he did not want to disrupt it. No one answered. The horses moved forward, a cart loaded with supplies in the middle of the party, and Yanacheris surrounding them. Radu looked over his shoulder to see Machia standing with a torch, watching them leave, staying behind, smiling. Radu shivered. He had not been frightened until he saw the look of triumph on Machia's face. Nothing that made his older brother look that happy could be good. As his wariness abated, Radu dozed on and off in his saddle, startling awake several times when he nearly slid off. One of the times a hand steadied him, and he found Lazar next to him, holding the reins of Radu's horse and his own. Comforted, Radu snuggled deeper into his cloak and was lost to the lullaby of hooves and the whisper of leather. They made camp well after the sun had risen. Their party was small. Several Yanacheris, a few servants, a driver for the supply cart, Lada and their father. Radu rubbed his sore neck, then realized with a start that his nurse was not with them.
"Lada!"
he tugged on her sleeve, interrupting her ferocious attempt to braid her hair.
"They forgot nurse!"
She glared at him, eyes red and tight with exhaustion. She watched the camp around them warily, tracking the movements of the soldiers.
"She is not coming!"
Radu swallowed hard against the painful lump in his throat. He had never been a day without his nurse. Here with his father, but not his nurse?
He had the same sensation as when he had been out on the ice and felt it shifting beneath him, threatening to plunge him into frozen terror.
But how long will we be gone?
Lada strode past him, ripping her bundle of possessions out of Lazar's arms.
That is mine, she snapped. Never touch my things.
She turned on her heel and stalked away toward their father's tent. Lazar made an exaggerated bow, then winked at Radu.
Charming girl, your sister.
Radu's mouth formed a smile for the first time all day.
You should see her when she has had enough sleep. Is she nicer? Oh no, far worse.
Lazar's laugh made Radu feel lighter. Lazar motioned for him to follow, and he did, helping the Yanacheris unload and set up their spare, efficient camp. They traveled this way for more days than Radu thought to count. At first he worried about what his father would think of how he spent his time, but his father never so much as spoke to him or Lada. He wore his worry in the gloom of his brow, wrapped around him tighter than his cloak. He muttered, practicing some sort of speech, waving away anyone who got too close. So Radu was free to ride with the Yanacheris. He loved the constant jokes, the exaggerated stories, the calm and easy way they rode, as though they were not fleeing, which Radu suspected was the case, though no one would tell him, but rather on an adventure. Your sister rides like a man, one of the soldiers, a quiet Bulgarian with an old scar cutting across his chin, said one day as they passed through a rocky valley. Radu shrugged.
They tried to teach her to ride like the ladies, but she refused.
I could teach her to ride like a lady, the Bulgarian said, something in his tone different.
A few of the other Yanacheris laughed, and Radu shifted uncomfortably, certain he had missed something, but unsure what.
Too young, Lazar said dismissively.
Too ugly, another soldier added.
Radu glared, but he could not tell who had said it. He watched his sister ride tall and proud and alone.
She could beat any of you. The soldiers laughed, and he scowled. I mean it. Any one of you.
She is a girl, the Bulgarian said, as though that were the end of any discussion.
Shh, Lazar shook his head. I think no one has told her this. We would not want her to hear it from us.
He grinned at Radu, bringing him in on the joke, and Radu smiled, though it was not as easy as his smiles for the Yanacheris usually were. After that, Radu spent more time riding beside Lada. She pretended not to notice, but she held her shoulders a little more loosely when he was next to her. Her hands drifted frequently to a small leather pouch, tied around her neck and tucked under her collar. Radu wondered what was in it, but he knew better than to ask. They were going south, through Bulgaria, studiously avoiding any cities as they picked their way across valleys and over steep terrain. Radu had gleaned enough to know that they were heading for the Ottoman capital of Edirne. The closer they got, the further into his cloak their father retreated. He spoke only when he had to, casting heavy, worried looks at Lada and Radu over the evening fire.
I am sending them back, he said, several nights into the journey. I do not want them with me. They slow us, and the boy is too weak to travel so far. He has always been delicate.
Radu did not realize whom his father meant until all of the Yanacheris turned toward him and Lada. What had they done wrong? Radu had kept his homesickness and his longing for his nurse to himself. Surely no one had noticed him crying silently the first two nights. He had ridden without complaint, helped set up and take down camp, done everything right. He expected Lada to protest their father's rejection, but she remained silent, staring at the fire. Their father looked anywhere but at them, his face a mask in the darkness. Lazar rested a hand on Radu's shoulder. Radu is doing very well. He rides like a seasoned soldier. Besides, we cannot spare a guard for them,
The Sultan's hospitality is beyond compare. You would not want to deprive your children of the opportunity to experience his generosity.
Radu's father sniffed and turned his face away, staring into the night.
Very well. It is all the same.
He retired to his tent, and for the rest of the trip, he neither spoke to nor looked at them.
Radu tried to ask Lada about it, but she too was silent and preoccupied.
When at last they came over the crest of a hill and saw a dinner laid out before them, Radu's heart seized with joy and wonder. The buildings were pale white stone, the roofs red, streets lined with spring-green trees weaved through it all, leading to a building with a spire so high that Radu was surprised it did not scratch the blue of the sky. Several domes made up its roof, and another, shorter spire rose to greet the party, welcoming them. Nearby was a large, imposing building, its outside striped red and white with alternating brick and stone. But Radu could not take his eyes off the spires that reached so confidently for heaven. They had arrived. 11. 1448. Edirne, Ottoman Empire. Vlad walked behind Sultan Murad, half stooped from bowing so often. Lada watched with resigned wariness. Radu was at her side, clinging to her like a small child. She had to pry his hand off her arm, where he was wrinkling the sleeve of her finest dress. He had acted as though their journey here was playtime and befriended the soldiers, the enemy soldiers. Radu was a fool. They had not journeyed here. They had fled, leaving the throne in the waiting hands of Machia. Machia, who had long curried favor with the Boyars and Hunyadi. Machia, who promised to hold the prince title in wait for his father's return. Lada had no doubt her father would need an army to return, and not just against the Boyars and Hunyadi. For a few precious hours, Lada had nurtured a dream that perhaps she could find Bogdan here. But all hope had vanished. They had been welcomed with rooms prepared just for them, lush, perfumed, and pillowed prisons they had not been permitted out of for the past 2 days. Vlad had paced so much, muttering and practicing speeches, that sweat soaked his silk undershirt. Radu had stared out the window, which was framed by metal twisted and shaped like vines. Lada had watched her father. His threads snapped. One left, one single thread that he desperately hoped to loop around the Sultan and his mercurial support. She tugged Radu's hand to make him walk faster, so they could keep up with the party of adults. This was not the behavior Lada expected from Vlad Dracul. From her father. From a dragon. A dragon did not crawl on its belly in front of its enemies, begging for their help. A dragon did not vow to rid the world of infidels and then invite them into its home. A dragon did not flee its land in the middle of the night like a criminal. A dragon burned everything around herself until it was purified in ash. The party came to a stop on a balcony overlooking a square paved in intricately swirled tiles of bright blue and yellow. Edirne was beautiful, ornate and stately, but with a dizzying elegance to everything. Lada distracted herself by imagining raising it to the ground. It is settled then, the Sultan said, not looking at her father while he spoke. His eyes were dark points beneath carefully shaped eyebrows that were turning silver with age. He was cradled in silks, an enormous turban towering above and around his head. He traced a line of his moustache down into his beard, fingers glinting with jeweled rings. I will send you back with a Yanacheri guard and the full support of the Ottoman throne. You will pay a yearly tribute of 10,000 gold ducats and 500 Yanacheri recruits for the honor of our patronage. And you will ensure that our interests are protected along your Hungarian
and Transylvanian borders.
Lara stopped listening as her father bowed and made promises and expressed his gratitude. The Sultan left, leaving behind one of his advisers,